Welcome to And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife with me, Susan Dolce.
And me, Leone Dyer. We are two good friends navigating the twists and turns of that middle part of life, and we are laughing our way through it.
Don't get us wrong, it's not all that funny all the time. There's so much we are unprepared for. Adult children, changing bodies, aging parents. We want you to know that you are not alone in these challenges. So sit back, get a front row seat as we share true life stories with a fresh perspective and just a pinch of irreverence. And That's When I Realized starts now.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to And That's When I Realized. I'm Leone Dyer.
And I'm Susan Dolce.
And this is a show where we're tackling the truth and comedy of midlife. So Susan and I are best friends who get together through Zoom every Friday afternoon to share our week, the joys, the challenges, the laughs, and just discuss all those things that friends share. I don't know about you, but we thought we would have midlife. We thought by the time we got to our midlife that we would have everything figured out.
Mm-hmm.
But it turns out there's a whole lot that we just never expected. So today we've condensed several of our discussions about our fathers and our husbands as fathers for today's show called Dads, Daughters, and Learning How to Drive.
Let's hope the husbands aren't listening.
I know. Well, two things. First, I just want to say, you're probably going to get my Maine accent when every time I say father. I'm trying very hard.
Okay, say it with a Maine accent. Let me hear what that sounds like. Father?
Father.
Okay.
My niece is probably like, oh, Aunt Lee, stop that. But Susan, I wanted to ask, did your dad teach you how to drive?
No.
No. Okay.
No, my mom tried to teach me how to drive. She took me into a cemetery because that's where my mom didn't learn how to drive until she was in her 40s.
Oh, wow.
And so she took me to drive in the cemetery because she thought there was nobody there that I could hurt because everybody's dead already. And I ran two old ladies off the road and almost put the car into a pond. So I did. Actually, my ex-husband taught me how to drive.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. My dad did.
Yeah.
My dad taught, I had a driving instructor because I did the whole driver's ed thing at school, which like everyone in school kind of, that's just what you did.
Mm-hmm.
And he should not have been driving himself. He was teaching. But no, my dad was the one who, we had a stick shift car.
Yeah, I learned with a stick shift.
Around on all the back roads because we live in the country. And So,
but was he kind to you?
Okay. That's, yes. He was very firm. And okay.
There's like no wrong, there's no good answer to that, right? Like, have to say yes. Of course he was kind to me.
I will say, this is one of the discussions that we would totally be having at 4 o'clock on a Friday.
With a cocktail. But yes, okay. Go on.
When I get into the car with my parents, because I now drive my parents quite a bit. Mm-hmm. When I get into the car with them, I revert back. Even though I'm 56, mm-hmm. I am 16.
Yeah.
So my dad will, and I've been driving, okay, someone do the math, but you know, that many years. And my father will be saying, okay, no, slow down. There's a stop sign up ahead. Now slow down. Don't put the brake on too fast. You're going to ruin your brakes. Now stop. Okay. Is your blinker on? Okay. Now wait. There's a car coming. Hold on. Now you can turn. Got it, Dad. I got it. I know,
So wait, he still does that to this day is what you're saying.
Oh yeah.
He still is a backseat driver.
He is in the back too. For whatever reason, my parents do not fight over, shotgun like the kids. Mm-hmm. My parents fight over who gets the back seat.
Because they're afraid to be in the front seat.
No, I think because they don't have to they feel they have to entertain me because I'm driving.
Oh, okay.
And I think they get control over the, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
And when we get to the end of the show, you'll understand why we're talking about driving and driver's licenses. Because
yes,
don't worry, it's all going to tie together.
It all comes together. Thinking, what are we? Yeah, no, it all, yeah.
So, you know, in our last show, we were talking about how, you know, you grew up on a farm. And I grew up in the city. And so, and how we are still like, not still, how we managed to become really good friends, despite our really different upbringings. Mm. And so I'm curious, like, so I know what my dad was like when I was a kid. And let me know if I'm taking this off into a place you're not ready to go yet. But I adored my father as much as I was terrified by my father. Mm. And I was totally daddy's girl, totally daddy's girl. I might've mentioned before that my older two brothers are 9 and 12 years older than me. So obviously by the math, I was a surprise. And my mom was convinced from the day she found out she was pregnant that this was her girl. That's how I got my name, actually, because she would pat her tummy and go, "This is my Susie Q." And so when I was born, she's like, "Well, I haven't been calling her that, so I might as well name her Susan." Anyway, I think he was delighted to have a daughter. I think I posted this in social media not too long ago that I think I brought out a playful side of him because he didn't have to. I think raising sons to him was a daunting task because he was doing the best he could, but I don't think he thought he was had the best parents. And so I think he felt really challenged in raising sons.
My dad, because I'm the oldest, I'm the only girl. I know my dad says, well, when I was born, my mom tells me that when my dad held me, he's like, "Oh, I have something that's mine." My dad grew up 7 siblings. He was the youngest boy. He had the only girl in the family was his sister below, just below him. So It was kind of a rough, yeah. His mother was, sorry, my cousins, she was not the nicest. So he came in with a little bit of a gentleness in that aspect. He was tough though. I mean, he has his opinion. And he has a work ethic that is very difficult to live up to. Mm-hmm. But my dad shows this kindness in a way that's very gentle, like or very caring. Like he doesn't so when I was in third grade, and I hope they're not listening, but when I was in third grade, we live on this long driveway up a hill. And you can imagine what Maine winters are like. And I would wear these big clunky boots to school. And when I got to school, I'd have to take my boots off and put shoes on. And I didn't like carrying my shoe. And we didn't have backpacks like back then. They were no.
Yeah. FYI. Yeah. Backpacks didn't exist.
Your shoes
I don't know.
In your hand.
Yeah. We just carried our books.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I might try to cram my, cause I was very lazy, cram my shoes into my lunchbox or something. But my dad they went shopping. Every Friday, my parents would go shopping at grocery shopping. And my dad went to a department store right next door. And he was so excited. He came home and he had a shoe bag.
Aww.
Like a man's shoe bag. It looked like a man's cosmetic bag. It was hideous, ugly. A third grade girl does not want to carry this and her, you know, I don't know what was, you know, the third grade was the Partridge Family, you know, lunchbox.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right.
Or the Brady Bunch. Yeah.
Or the Brady Bunch or yeah. The Monkees. Here we are. We're going down memory lane. But so I don't remember what I did with it, but I remember I did something. Like I put it in the trash at school or I hid it somewhere at school or I gave it away. I don't remember, but I got rid of it. I came home. And they're asking, "Where's your shoe bag?" I don't know. Someone took it. Completely lied. the next Friday. And we didn't have a lot of money. It wasn't like a lot of extra money. The next week, my dad went back to the store. He came home that Friday evening and he was so excited. They had one left and he bought it. Are you kidding? So there I was carrying both my lunchbox and my shoe bag. And I don't know what happened. I now wish I had that because he did that.
Yeah.
That was a little gentle side.
Yeah.
There were other sides of him where he'd be like, just toughen it up and carry your shoes. You're okay.
Yeah. The going uphill both ways, holes in your shoes to school story.
Oh yeah. He totally, he totally walked both ways up. Yeah. In a snowstorm every day of the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing. That's why it's so interesting to look back like we are today on our dads and what now being older, looking back and seeing a different side to them and understanding a fresh perspective on why they did what they did and why they said what they said and why they might have been super overprotective or why he just wanted you to have your shoes in a bag so you didn't have to carry
them. I would lose them because I was probably losing a shoe every day on the bus. I will say though, now having a spouse and children and watching how my husband interacted and the things that he did. And even this past year, my husband moved our daughter how many times?
A lot of times.
During the pandemic. As soon as the school closed, he drove down to New York City and what we thought was going to be a couple of weeks, moved her out. And then it turned into, no, she's permanently moving home. And now she's permanently moving into another. So he would do this and he would do all these other things for both the kids. And I'm sure I'm sure at times they would were rolling their eyes. And then the other times they were like, thank you very much. But I now can see it through the parent eyes of the father's eyes of how they were, why they were doing this and how sometimes it's out of their character.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we want to continue with this discussion about just how parenting has changed or the role of dads has changed since when we were kids in the 60s. And then even how there was a drastic change in the 70s when they were finally allowed in the delivery rooms and to what's the role of fathers now? And how can we raise good fathers, right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to And That's When I Realized, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia. And I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that our whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Welcome to Blue Lightning Healing Meditations. I'm Susie Parker Goins. I'm a channel bringing through spirit guides in accessible and resonant ways for you to connect with your higher self, sharing soul-level conversations to help you in your spiritual path. I upload weekly channeled messages, interviews, and information on a variety of topics, sharing my learning and opening doors for growth. You can find a listing of upcoming podcasts at bluelightninghealing.com. Until next time, blessings.
Get empowered on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
It's your turn to reclaim your life. Experience the unmitigated joy of breathing life into your own passions, into your own purpose, with me, life coach Ricky Schwartz, at MyTurnLifeCoaching.com. In the meantime, tune into my show, My Turn Life Coaching, live every second and fourth Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to And That's When I Realized. I'm Susan Dolce.
And I'm Leon Dyer.
And this is a show where we talk about the truth and comedy of midlife. And today we are talking about, I mean, it's a little past Father's Day, but we just felt it was really an important topic to us to talk about the role of our fathers in our lives, how they shaped us to be who we are, and how we have a different understanding of who they were as parents, like, and like what formed them to be the dads that they were for us. And when we were talking about what we, you know, the show, when Leon and I were having like a prep session, we were talking about how fatherhood has changed so much from 60s. So like we were both born in 64 to now. And you know, just like dads back then were, you know, uninvolved. Like my mom was a stay-at-home mom until I was about in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And then she took a job literally at the local department store. Like we walked everywhere. Like I said, my mom didn't drive until I was in high school. And she took a job at the department store that literally backed up to my school so she could be close to me in case something happened. Yeah, literally, the school and the department store shared an alley. But my dad, and like I said, I think I brought out a playful side in him. He was never really verbally abusive. I never laid a hand on me. He had this thing where if he was mad at me, because usually it was, I was pushing my mom's buttons. Like if I was sassing or talking back or just, you know, on the edge of disrespect, he would spit into his hands, or he would pretend to go like, puh, puh, and then rub his hands together, which meant you better stop it or you're going to get smacked. But he never did. And I don't think he ever would have, but I was just like, I would just cower, be like, okay, I overstepped the boundaries. Okay. When you're spitting in your hands, I know I was clearly a bad girl. Like I was terrified, but at the same time, I knew he would never lay a hand on me. I knew that. It was just, how did he scare me out of the behavior that I was in at the moment? What about your dad? Like, was he a disciplinarian or?
Maybe. I don't know. I didn't fear my dad. I will say that. I ran from him a lot. There's a story where I remember exactly what I did. I won't air my behaviors, but I remember what I did. And I realized, oops, I'm in trouble. And I jumped up and I ran out of the kitchen into like through the multiple rooms into the bathroom. And I remember it was on the first floor and I crawled through the bathroom. I locked the door and I crawled through the bathroom window out. and then I'm running, I could hear my father, you know, running through the front door, like to come out. But you know, he didn't do anything when he caught me. I mean, he was just wanted me to apologize. And then he made me climb back through the bathroom window. And I remember like, I can't. He goes,
oh my God, really?
My mom was probably more of a disciplinarian. I mean, and she didn't like hit us, but there's other, well, maybe we'll have a discussion about mothers and I'll bring up, you know, share that story. But my dad was, he made it very clear what he expected from us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he would just tell us, and he made it very clear when he was disappointed in mm-hmm. us.
We talked about like when our dads like showed their vulnerable side or their human side. Like my dad was not, I only saw my dad cry once when I should have seen him cry a solid three times. And it was at the memorial service for my grandmother. And so I was 12 or 13. And that was the first time I ever saw him show any of the softer side of him, you know, the vulnerable side of him. And I remember thinking, thank God. I remember thinking, okay, my dad is a human.
Because he cried. Okay. Yeah.
And like I said, there should have been two other memorial services that he should have cried, and he didn't. And I think he was just so overwhelmed with grief that he couldn't even manage to cry. Yeah. Being vulnerable, especially I think for men back then, was just like, that wasn't a thing. Like you don't do that. You know, little boys don't cry or big boys don't cry. And that just carries over into all the other emotions, like tenderness or, you know, like holding a newborn baby or, I feel badly for these men that were, just not allowed to feel their feelings.
Yes. And I also think that they were kind of fitting a mold. I mean, mm-hmm. think about like men were supposed to be this tough, stoic protector. And if you showed emotion, then, I mean, I remember growing up, I don't know if my dad said it, but I definitely remember we had one uncle who, if his sons cried, he would say, you know, toughen up. You're not a girl. Stop crying. So there was definitely that, you know, not to show emotion. Mm-hmm. My dad did not show a lot of emotion. Trying to think of the order it went. My mother's parents passed first, and I don't remember him crying. His mother passed. He didn't cry. I'm trying to think. It wasn't until he got older and he became a little more relaxed in himself mm-hmm. That he started showing his true emotions as far as crying.
What did you think?
I can't handle the crying okay. with him. Like my mom over the past year, which my mom has been very sick, and I would drive my dad to the hospital to visit my mom, and he would cry. I mean, just cry. He would cry because he was sad. He would cry because this is his partner of, I don't know, 58 years. I mean, what, he was scared and he would cry. Yeah. I couldn't take the crying. I could take the, you know, little harsh, little digs, or I could take the, you know, critique on my driving, or I could take the huffing and the puffing that he does. He does this, you know, kind of huffing and puffing. The crying is just like, you know, I don't know how to deal with that. I can deal with my mom crying.
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, because she's a woman and we're women and So what is it about when he's crying? Like what, we're going to do a session right here. We're going to have a client session. No, what is it? Like, what is it that, is it because you can't help him, or is it just because like what makes it uncomfortable?
Well, one, I mean, my dad still has that very, stoic, you know, side to him. So I'm like trying to figure out like, okay, you know, figure out I'm learning more about my dad is one. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy that he's showing emotion, because my whole childhood, my life, he would show emotion, but not those tender, deep, emotions. Like we grew up on a farm, and unfortunately there were some incredibly tender, difficult moments with the animals. Mm-hmm. He never cried about them. He never cried when there was an animal that they had to put down because something happened, or he would be very silent. I can take the silent. Mm-hmm. Crying. I'm happy that he's now able to express himself. Mm-hmm. It's just very hard. Like, oh, what do we do? Yet my husband, to see my husband cry, he cries all the time. If the kids will put on, different movies just to watch my husband cry. I think we are merging into, or we're going into more where men can show their emotions. Whereas when I grew up, I didn't see that tender side of my dad. Mm-hmm.
I want to read a quote from Brené Brown. Mm-hmm. And I read this several years ago, and I was blown away by this because, I think, as women, we always say, oh, we want you to be vulnerable and we want you to, show your emotions. But at the same time, when it's with your dad, of course you said with your husband, it's fine, but I'm going to read this. It says, this was one of her biggest aha moments. And she says, the story I tell that gets the biggest reaction from the guys in my audiences is when a man approached me after a lecture I gave on shame to say, my wife and daughters, they'd rather see me die on top of my white horse than watch me fall off. You say want us to be vulnerable and real, but come on, you can't stand it. It makes you sick to see us like that. And then she goes on to say, men are smart. They hear us asking for their vulnerability, but they're also very aware that we might act scared or resentful when they show their vulnerable side. You wouldn't believe how often men tell me, I pretend to be vulnerable, but I keep it under control. Or I give her enough to believe I'm being open, because if I were totally truthful about how afraid or out of control I feel, she would judge me. Underneath the pretending lies hurt, disappointment, and shame.
Whoa.
Yeah. Is that
That's it. There's the show right there. Done.
Yeah. I mean, I think that that one line about they'd rather see me die on my horse, because it's that, I know this side of you, I want to see this side of you, but now I'm seeing it. Now I don't feel whatever range of emotions they are feeling. And that's what I want to talk about when we come back, because I have some thoughts on that. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to And That's When I Realized.
Listen up. The wealth you receive is a result of your personal relationship with the soul of money, meaning your spiritual well-being affects your ability to create abundance. Jennifer Bloom works with people to mend the spiritual disconnects that block up the cash flow. How's your relationship with yourself? Are you in balance with the divine? I know, these are big questions, but there are answers. Take Jennifer's free money relationship quiz to learn where you need to focus your energy and watch yourself grow into the abundance you deserve. Trust the divine. Learn to receive. You are worthy of all the wealth you seek. Visit jenniferbloom.com and click on the purple banner to take the free money relationship quiz. That's Jennifer Bloom, BLOOME.com.
Your inspiration all day on transformationtalkradio.com.
Are you your story? Or can you change your story? Can you change what you believe to be true about yourself and your circumstances as part of your healing journey? What if you were to change your expectations? What if you were to invite ease and cooperation into every day? and then step back and see what happens. It might just be easier. I'm Megan Edge, and I hope that you'll join me on my new radio show, Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host, Dr. Pat, on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
Want to find out more about Megan Edge? Visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Can't get enough of Eye of Soul Radio? Join psychic medium Jamie every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Take a deeper look at the raw side of spirit. Nothing is off limits. Connect with lost loved ones and explore these vulnerable subjects with the compassionate guidance of psychic medium Jamie. You are not alone. Eye of Soul, Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, we're back. You're listening to, and that's when I realized, I'm Susan Dolce.
And I'm Leon Dyer.
And this is a show where we talk about the truth and comedy of midlife. And today we are talking about fathers, a little late past Father's Day. But like I said, this is an important topic to us because not just how we were parented, but how our spouses parent and what the role of fathers is, fathers are, fathers is. Anyway, today. Before the break, we were talking, I gave that Brene Brown quote about how women want to see their men be vulnerable, but then when they actually are, they're like, oh, hold up.
Yeah.
What's going on? Because they are not prepared or don't know how to deal with what is, this is sounds judgmental. I can't think of a better word though, but it's weakness, right? Mm-hmm. You've been using the word tenderness. So when we get those moments where they don't have to keep it all together. They're letting their guard down. Yeah. They're letting it kind of all hang out and showing emotion, hopefully feeling their feelings all the way through, which we're also going to talk about. But I felt like I still feel that the role of father is to provide safety. Our DNA and our, I believe in a certain, to a certain extent, we're wired for the male to provide safety, right? Like yes. Go back to caveman days. Like we take care of the young and they make sure nobody eats us. And stability. Both of those things apply to mothers as well. But I think go ahead. Yeah.
Well, no, I was going to say, even today, I mean, even in my marriage with my husband, if we hear a noise outside, I'm going to stay in bed. And my husband goes, I am not, you know, but when the kids would cry, especially when they were incredibly little, I was the one that got up and went, not Dan. Mm-hmm. You know? So I think we, you know, those roles are kind of ingrained in us. On that male female role of who's the protector, who is the nurturer type thing. But Dan very much is, I think it's kind of, how we were raised to believe this is what the male does. This is what the female does.
Although I think it's genetic too.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's in the, what are the guys, have the Y, anyway, it's in that chromosome that makes them men. I'm not trying to be, men have different body types too. They have more muscles. They have different body composition. So do we, can nurture babies and so they can protect the babies and hunt and whatever. I mean, I know that's basic, but.
And I also think that I keep using the word tender, but I mean, I also think that they protect us in a very gentle way as well. I mean, not just, it wasn't just my mother who was gentle with me or, mm-hmm. you know, nurturing. My dad also had little pieces of it. And so one time, like my dad was very like, he was very black and white. This is what it was. This is what we did. And, you know, any, you know, anything in between, he didn't quite deal with. And I was getting married and got married very young. My dad liked Dan. I don't think Dan was their first choice. Actually, no, he was not, but it's all worked out. But it was at our wedding and we're getting, you know, we were standing in the church. I'm in my wedding gown. My dad's in his suit. And my maid of honor has just left. She's gone through the doors and she kind of had to go around a corner to be seen by the congregation. And so my dad and I were alone in this little room in the entrance of the church. And we both were standing there. My dad has my arm. We're ready to walk through that door. And my dad and I both turned and looked behind us at the front door. Mm-hmm. Nothing was said. We just kind of looked and then we turned back and we looked at each other. And he very quietly says, "Are you sure about this?" And in that moment, I knew that if I said, "Nope," we would have walked out and he would have taken care of it. And there would have been no questions asked. Like he wouldn't have, I would have had plenty to answer from everyone in that church, including my, you know, my fiance, but I knew that. And I knew that when I walked through that door, like when we walked through that door and he walked me down the aisle, that he also was going to have me. Like he was also going to have my back and there would be no questions he would ask. He was going to support me. And I remember just like, and I don't think it really hit me at that moment. It wasn't until I looked back and reflected on that, like, wow, how just gentle and nurturing and yet incredibly strong and supportive that interaction was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just it was very sweet. I mean, we've had a few moments like that, but not a whole lot. He would tell me to tough it up and move on.
And especially now that you have a daughter who is of marrying age, to think that like, if Dan were in that spot, if he was about to walk your daughter down the aisle and if he said that, like, think about that. Like, it's a totally different perspective. You'd be going, really, really, all the money that we spent on this wedding?
Well, no, that totally would be Dan. 100% Dan. I would be asking her. Well, Liz always, my daughter has a plan B for everything. It doesn't matter. Plan B. She'll probably be walking down the aisle and she'll turn to Dad and say, "Don't worry, I have a plan B if it doesn't work out." So we have that joke in the family, but yeah.
So when I was 14 or 15, getting that age where we're starting to, you know, I was allowed to have double dates. So my dad took me to a really fancy, my dad loved food and he loved fine dining and breathing SpongeBob. Anyway, I digress. He loved fine dining. And so he took me to this really nice French restaurant. And he loved to eat all sorts of different foods. I mean, I think that was the time I had oysters Rockefeller and halfway down the oyster was going down my throat. And I'm looking at my father like, "I hate you." And he's like, "Just keep swallowing." And I was like, Anyway, so he took me to this great restaurant. We had fabulous food. He really encouraged me to try, you know, different things that I would never normally order. And I was like, well, you know, I forget where my mom was. She must've been out of town or something. And, at the end of the night, he said, it wasn't just the restaurant. It was, you know, opening the car door for me, opening the door to the restaurant, pulling out my chair, like all of those gentlemanly things. And he, at the end of the night, he said, "This is how a man should treat you when you go out." Like, of course, he's not expecting a 14-year-old boy to do that, but like, he wanted me to know what was acceptable and what wasn't, and to say, no, like, I'm not going to, you know, you're not treating me with respect, mm-hmm. or you know, anyway, that was one of those tender moments with him where I was like, wow, like that was, I never thought that he cared that much.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those little, and I think for like moving forward, just watching even my brothers and how they are with their children, it's a little bit different. I think they have these open conversations more than I had with my dad, or my dad would have with us. And they are, my husband included, and my brothers, they express the everyday emotions more openly. Mm-hmm.
They can see, and I don't have any sons, so I can't. That was, you know, one of the things I'm curious about is how do you raise good fathers today? How do you raise young men to be okay with vulnerability, be okay showing their emotions? We mentioned, like, feeling your feelings all the way through, which, you know, aggression is a bad word. And most people think aggression is a bad word when it really isn't. It really is the life force of everything. It's just, how do you deal with aggression? So, I'm very curious about, you know, women who are raising sons and young men today and how you foster that.
Well, yeah, I was as far as I want to say that we raised both our daughter and our son with the same perspective, mm-hmm. is that you treat whoever you're with, or whoever's in front of you, whoever's around you, with the same level as respect as you would want for yourself. But I remember when my son, when he was like 16, he had this, like, he was just all these energy and emotion inside. He didn't know how to deal with it. It was like he was growing, he was developing. And he got very angry one time and showed this aggression. And we were, as parents, were like, you know, you can't do that. You can't. But it was my husband's father who was visiting when this happened. He's like, no, he has to show it. You need to teach him how to show this aggression, to take it out, because it is inside, where he doesn't throw aggression on another human or on another thing, or, you know, punch the wall or whatever. And I'm like, okay, you know, so thank goodness we had him. But yeah, I think, and my son can be, you know, he's very gentle. He can be very tender. He can, his words can cut, yeah, through a brick wall, you know, but, and so can my daughters, actually, now. She can sometimes be, yeah. I think when they're, you know, like when they're, I think just to remember, like, as they're growing, mm-hmm. it's just their body. It's just their body that's getting bigger.
Mm-hmm. So, you know. We're going to take another break. When we come back, I want to talk about the little boys, mm-hmm. the little boys in the big bodies, the inner child. I have a great story about that. You're listening to And That's When I Realized, and we'll be right back.
Learn how to RISE in business by being confident on video. Confidence coach Susan Axelrod and online business producer Pam Sullivan have teamed up, bringing you a new podcast, Webcam Confidence for Women. Tune in live every first and third Friday at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, and stay for an open virtual presenter studio session. Offering attendees confidence on webcam, a must-have skill for every woman in business. For more information, visit volutionvirtual.com/studio.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. something for everyone guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
When was the last time you had that feeling that you knew something, but you couldn't explain how you knew it? How powerful would it be for your life and business if you could consciously tap into that magic within you? What if you could remember that there's something supernatural about you? Tune in to Absolute Alignment with Christelle Biga, When Success Feels Easy, every first and third Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Conscious Confidence Radio, a timeless wisdom with Sarah Main. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio and join Sarah on an adventurous journey to the deeper level of meaning to move beyond today's world of constant change, confusion, and uncertainty beyond the shadow of fear. This hit show explores key concepts such as confidence, values, and attitude in a dynamic way. To learn more about Sarah and her work, visit sarahmain.com.
Hello, I'm Susie Parker Goins of Blue Lightning Healing. I'm a channel, so I embody your guides, allowing you to have soul deep conversations. A Reiki master and energy healer, we work together to find and identify the blockages in your energy and learn to release them. I love looking at past lives and how they're affecting you in the now and what you can do to resolve them, and more as you learn about your possibilities. I'm available for phone and virtual sessions. Go to BlueLightningHealing.com for more information.
Hey, everybody, we are back. You're listening to And That's When I Realized. Today, we have been talking about the role of fathers in our lives, the importance of fathers, and we've covered a lot about vulnerability, showing emotion, the role of fathers, and the show graphic for today was a little boy in the seat of a car, driving a car, and the title of today's show, this episode, is Dads, Daughters, and Learning How to Drive. And so I want to share the story about when I, like, it was my And That's When I Realized moment with my own dad. And it was a grace-filled moment, if absolutely nothing else. It was a beautiful, tender moment. But so I had moved back home. I'd been married for about 5 years, and it was a very turbulent marriage. If my dad had said that, Leon, like if he had said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" I would have said no. But on my wedding day, I didn't have that option. Anyway, so I asked to move back home. I really didn't have a whole lot of options, you know, tail between my legs, because, you know, my dad was the sort of man like, okay, you're married now. That means you're an adult grown up woman and we, you know, you're not on our payroll anymore. Mm. And so I moved back home and it had been, I don't know, a few days, maybe a week. And I mean, it was a physically abusive marriage. It was, you know, all the abuses, verbal, physical, emotional. And so I was sitting, we had a spiral staircase in our front room. And I used to sit on that. My dad's chair was sort of adjacent to the spiral staircase. And that's when I was really tiny and had tiny butt and I could fit in the rocks of the spiral staircase.
You're still tiny.
And I was sitting there, we were talking, and he said, "Well, I never asked you." He's like, "So, you know, why'd you come back?" And I told him that it was a bad marriage. And, you know, I made a mistake and, I probably should have never gotten married in the first place. And I told him that it was abusive. And he said to me, "Well, you must have done something to deserve it." And I looked at my dad and I was like, excuse me, was my in my head. And I heard him in my voice, in my head again, I heard him say, "You must have done something to deserve it." Mm. And in that moment, my dad ceased to be the man in his 50s in the big easy chair, and he was this little boy.
Yeah.
And he was this little boy who, when he got hit or he got yelled at or he got emotionally abused, he was thinking, what did I do to deserve this?
Yeah.
I must have done something to deserve this, because I'm not a bad person. What did I do? I must have done something wrong. And because the dividing line in that moment was, I could have walked away. I could have like tolerated my dad until I got the money to move out. I could have drawn this line in the sand and said, that's it. I'm breaking off this relationship with you. How can you look at me and say, I did something to deserve to be treated that way. I'm your daughter.
Yeah.
And I realized that's not who was talking.
It was the little boy. Yeah.
It was the little boy. It was the little boy who was still afraid. Mm-hmm. And still wondering if something bad happens or somebody's mean to him or wrongs him in any way, he must have done something to deserve it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think to go back to the question that you asked in the last segment, how do we raise, you know, like how are we raising these at this point, these young men into being dads and being, and it is remember seeing that little boy. I mean, they all say the same. I mean, watching them grow, they still have the same triggers they had when they were 8. Uh-huh. When they're 48. And I think allowing the men or allowing the children who grow into men who to be able to express that, to be able to go in. And I notice it with my dad now getting older. I see the little boy more often than I did when I was younger and he was younger.
Yeah. I mean, and that's when I realized.
And that's when I realized.
How many times can we use that today? And that's when I realized that really, what's at play in people's lives throughout most of their day, their daily experiences, it's their inner child who's calling the shots.
Oh yeah.
It's their mm-hmm. wounds that happened when they were little who are making all the decisions. Mm-hmm. They're making these decisions based out of fear, based out of shame, based out of unworthiness. And
yeah.
And that's like it's that bird's eye view. If you can step back and look at who is really engaging with each other, it's like it's still the bullies on the playground. That's why there's adult mean girls, right? Because
right.
they're still the bullies on the playground.
Well, I shared on social media, I asked people to give us a word or phrase of how they describe their dad. And so several people described. And so one was, I know this person very well. I mean, it's intense. Mm. And I know their father. Their father has intense. Their father's been intense since a child, you know, and he just kept that. He had to be intense in order to survive in the family. Mm-hmm. And then Erin said that her father is diligent, and her mm-hmm. father is. Her father's a workaholic. He had to be a workaholic to keep up with the expectations within their family. We're still living from those moments of our childhood as we move through.
Yeah. To me, that was one of my greatest life lessons was that.
Yeah.
To understand that, but we're all of us, every single person, we're all just coming from our wounded place.
Oh, yeah.
And
that little child within us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we like to say with this show that life didn't come with an instruction book, because, you know, we all wish it did, but it didn't.
We're midlife for
midlife, exactly. And yeah. Leon is the queen of the sticky notes. So life didn't come with an instruction book, but we can give you some advice, one sticky note at a time.
A little bit of wisdom.
And so today's sticky note is.
Yes. Don't give your inner child the keys to the car before they learn how to drive.
That's what I tell all my clients. Like, you don't understand. It's your inner child that's driving the car and they don't have their license yet. Mm-hmm. They're not ready. Like, mm-hmm. let's take care of that and heal that inner child. And then they can drive the car. Yeah.
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 Excellent.
Yeah. So if you'd like more information about Leon, you can find Leon at
leondyer.com, and all my social medias are attached to my website.
And I'm at susandolce.com, and there's some great freebies over there, especially for the midlife ladies who are empty nesters. I've got a freebie over there if you want to look at some questions on how to start, like when you're trying to rebuild your life as a mom. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
You're so good.
So thank you for listening, everyone. This is And That's When I Realized, and I'm Susan Dolce, and
I'm Leon Dyer,
and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Thanks for being here with us today on And That's When I Realized. We are here to shed some light on the misconceptions around midlife by sharing real life stories and a fresh perspective.
Look, we know it's not easy. The change is constant and inevitable. Let's explore what it means to move through challenges with a dose of humor and embrace each challenge, each new discovery with a higher sense of understanding. We hope you heard something today that made you laugh and recognize the truth and comedy of midlife. See you next time.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
We'd love to hear from you on Transformation Talk Radio and live on Facebook. Call into the show, 1-800-930-2819.
On the Spiritual Freedom Show, you will hear the voice of an extraterrestrial master speaking through my teacher, Dr. George King, as it was recorded over 60 years ago. I'm Richard Lawrence. And on this podcast, I bring you the 9 freedoms, which I believe to be the greatest wisdom on earth, with practical ways to give global service and attain enlightenment.
Hi, my name is Diane McClay. I'm comfortable being in front of people.